The date is June 19th, 1992, and we're watching Batman Returns. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Robin to my Batman.
Holy podcast. I don't know. Fuck. That yeah. Sucked. Anyways, I'm Colin Stewart, everybody.
So our Christmas movies roll on, and we decide to go with one of the unorthodox Christmas movies this week. And so we've got Batman Returns, and we figured, well, what the hell, we need a guest. So we brought in a first-time guest. He was on stage with our very own Colin Stewart just a couple months ago. Please welcome, for the first time, Mr. Lee Conrad.
Hey, glad to be here.
I was going to say hand-selected guest because yeah. while we were waiting backstage during our interstitial parts, Lee and I very much bonded over comics and Batman and all that. It was kind of funny because I really only met Lee at the first table read, and then I didn't see him again until I feel like almost tech week.
Like we were in the midst of starting to do the heavy yeah. rehearsal parts, and it wasn't until right now there's a crossover. I actually have to bring him on stage. Oh, now we can talk again. This is great.
Yeah,
you know, he walked in with a comic book related t-shirt, and I went, oh, you like that? And he went, yeah. You got a tattoo? Yeah. Oh
yeah.
Can I tell you about my love for this stuff, too?
It was actually very similar to the way that Sean and I met.
Yeah, we bonded over superhero tattoos and shirts, yeah. Yeah.
I don't have tattoos, but I appreciate the art form, so yeah. it's all good.
Nice.
Well, this week we are looking back at June 1992 when the movies and theaters were Episode 29, Subject, Sister Act, Alien 3, Patriot Games, House Sitter, and of course our movie for today, Batman Returns, which earned $266.9 million on an $80 million budget. The marketing budget, though, must have been out of control on this movie because of the amount of Catwoman bus ads they had to replace while this movie was being marketed. It was actually a bit of a crime wave, the amount of Catwoman bus ads that were stolen.
That's interesting to hear, but I don't think that's completely crazy because, you know, it's like this is the you're getting Michelle Pfeiffer in a bondage outfit, essentially.
Yep.
And, oh my God, like the funny thing is, like, I remember in high school when the film, like after the film came out and girls dressing up in that outfit for Halloween.
It was the Harley Quinn of 1992 is what that costume was.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes, but.
And every guy is going like, ha,
slutty villain. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead. So please.
Spoilers for an over almost 30-year-old movie.
Yeah, so don't eat any mistletoe and don't mean your kisses. Hit pause. Go watch this movie and then come back and hear what we have to say.
We feel it's one of those cover your ass situations. Yes, it is hilarious that a 31-year-old movie we would do spoilers on, but that's part of the charm. You know, it's if you haven't seen it, you know, this is your own damn fault at this point. We warned you. Well,
if you're listening to the show right now, you've probably already seen it, and that's why you
hopefully,
are listening to
hopefully,
this episode right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I found three taglines for the poster of this movie this week. The first one, this one kind of reminds me of the one we had a couple weeks ago with Uncle Buck. The first tagline is "Returns June 19th." Now, I remember this poster. It was just the bat symbol, and underneath it said "Returns June 19th." So I remember this poster.
Now was it the one with just the head, with the silhouette and the white on a white background?
I was just thinking logo, and it's slightly frozen logo.
So Yes, it's got the snow drifting across it, which they used in a lot of the promotional stuff for it. Yeah, but there was a couple. Yeah. There was that one and the one that you're referring to. I had that on a T-shirt.
Okay, when it came out.
And that was one of the coolest designs, you know, to be wearing. It's like, oh, yeah, the snowbone frozen bat symbol.
Well, second tagline, above Gotham looms its greatest hero.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know what the third one is, though.
You know what the third one is. Do you just want to say it? Because you know what it is.
Isn't it just the bat, the cat, the penguin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. I feel like it should include, it should be like the bat, the cat, the rat, the penguin. Because, I mean, Max Schreck is an underrated villain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, he's unvalued.
He's the true villain of the piece. Because he's a bad guy to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, he plays everybody in the film. I mean, it's just, and he's named after an actor who played the first film vampire. You know, Max Schreck was the actor who played Nosferatu in that black and white film back in the 20s.
Oh, my God.
That was the inspiration for that character.
Lee's going to make us look terrible here today.
No, I feel like you got to get David Owen on the phone to come, and like these guys just need to have like a battle.
Wait. Movie knowledge. You know David Owen? I'm dealing with him right now.
He's been on the show a few times.
I know Dave. We could probably go on for hours, I'm sure.
John and I will just sit back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll just start pumping out episodes and let them talk. Yeah. Colin, though, I mean, we are missing something here. Tell me what the proper tagline is for this movie. There is only one tagline for this movie. Oh, come on. You of all people, Colin.
I feel like I'm on the spot. It's too much pressure. So much pressure.
Jingle bells, Batman smells. Where the fuck is that tagline? It's right there. You've got a Batman Christmas movie.
Yeah.
I've always thought that, I don't know why Tim Burton didn't capitalize on the Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. Even the title Batman Returns, the more I think about it and the more I read it, just seems so bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Because it seems like a lazy sequel title. I don't know.
Had he called it the Dark Knight Returns, I think every comic book nerd would have been, where's the adaptation of the Frank Miller story?
Too much expectation.
But even
glasses pushed up the nose. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's easy to spot. Like, I mean, The Dark Knight Returns was an inspiration to that first film in terms of its aesthetic and feel, and it carries over into this movie very much so. Yeah. But I mean, had they called it that, it would have been like, that would be the beginning of really criticizing the whole adaptation.
I mean, we see that pretty much with every Marvel movie that comes out nowadays.
Oh, right?
Like,
a little bit.
Secret Invasion, like.
I don't want to get into that. The worst. Right? That's a huge tangent. I want to talk Batman.
All right.
Well, first, though, I mean, we only have taglines. We need to go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
Okay.
The Caped Crusader is back in action.
When Oswald Cobblepot, a.k.a. the Penguin, a discarded member of Gotham's elite, decides to ascend from the sewers, he opts to use his sob story to run for mayor. To do this, he teams up with local industrialist and generally bad guy, Max Schreck, who's fresh off murdering his assistant, Selina Kyle. But wait, Selina's not dead, she's only mostly dead. But luckily for her, she is friends with cats who lick her back to life, and she proceeds to channel all her sexual frustrations and hatred of men into becoming the Catwoman. After running afoul of the Dark Knight, Catwoman decides to team up with the Penguin to frame Batman as Gotham's greatest villain to get him off their back. They manage to do this by killing a snow princess and seizing control of the Batmobile, but their business arrangement comes to a quick end after Penguin gets a little too horny and Catwoman isn't having it. Penguin's life gets even worse after Batman puts an end to his mayoral campaign by revealing to all of Gotham what a douchebag he is. Meanwhile, in her non-spandex life, Selina struggles with her feelings for Bruce Wayne and desire to kill Max Schreck. At a masquerade ball, Bruce and Selina accidentally reveal their secret identities to each other over some sultry mistletoe-related wordplay before Penguin crashes the party in his giant duck and decides to go biblical by kidnapping Max and all the firstborn sons of Gotham. Penguin is once more foiled by Batman and unleashes an army of rocket-strapped penguins on the city. I don't even have to tell you what happens next. Batman stops the penguin. Shocker. Penguin makes one last attempt but gets blown through a glass window into his watery lair. Selina shows up to exact her revenge on Max. Bat-Bruce shows up with his magical eyeliner to try and get through to her, but no dice. She kills Shrek with a taser and disappears. There you go.
See, that's where you needed the shocker, was with Shrek's death.
Yeah, true.
Oh, boy.
I need to share a little factoid here that I came across in my official collector's magazine that came out for Batman Returns.
Sure, yeah, fire away.
Well, this is a funny little thing. So it says, from the history files, Gotham is a village in southern Nottinghamshire, England, whose inhabitants, according to legend, pretended to be stupid to discourage King John from setting up a residence there.
Okay.
So, and apparently Gotham is a nickname for New York City.
Nice.
So, I mean, I know DC tends to, like, they just make up their prominent cities to get around any real world scenarios.
Yeah, and where they're actually located, you know, in...
They're sort of
in relation to each other, I mean.
Yeah.
Because if you were to go by something like Batman v Superman, you're looking at, like, Jersey and New York City is what you're looking at for where they're actually supposed to be. But Gotham is always supposed to be some sort of Detroit, isn't it? Like,
it's hard. I always...
Yeah.
The animated series made it feel like Chicago. It has that timeless sort of quality in the sense that it feels old school gangster type of stuff, but yet it had all this modern tech in it as well. Yeah. So it's like it's otherworldly. It's its own beast, and I think that's what really made that work. Same here, like the aesthetic of the city design, where they go, okay, we're doing like crime noir New York City 1930s, and we're going to throw in a whole bunch of like fascist looking architecture all over it just to give it this weird oppressive kind of feel to it.
And yeah.
It's so bizarre.
We watched Batman and Robin not too long ago, and I know he commented on, like, Joel Schumacher takes that to a whole nother level just these, like, 50, like, 100-foot-tall statues
that you can drive
throughout
on.
The city that you can drive on. And, like...
like, that car chase is so dumb. But damn, is it fun. Like, he knew. It's like, I'm going to prevent Robin from launching himself off the arm of this gigantic statue because he might die. No, I can make it. No. I'm disabling the motorcycle. What? And it goes, it cuts power. He's sliding. He nearly falls to his death.
Mm-hmm.
How is Batman saving him? He probably could have made the jump.
Probably. It's like, you'll never know.
We'll never know. Because Robin's not in this movie.
That's right. He's supposed to be, but We'll get there. First, we have to do the part of our show where we talk about, oh boy, what we remember from when we were younger about this movie. Now, I mean, Batman Returns for me was everything, right? When it first came out. And I was there for Batman 89 and then Batman, this one came out and it was everything. I remember all the stuff. It's Batman, Batman, Batman. I'm not even going to talk about my history because I'm fascinated to get back to something that we were talking about before we started recording, Lee. You were talking about the prep work that you did for this movie. So it's actually your history with Batman. Why is it that you're here? There was obviously a reason that you were handpicked for this episode, even though my son is going to be so pissed off that I'm doing a Batman episode without him.
Well, let's see. I guess this is actually a movie that me and my co-host on another podcast that I do called The Scrappy-Doo Principle with Gilbert Da Silva, where we do something kind of similar to what you guys do and kind of run it through the gamut. But the difference is we'll talk about our stuff, our thoughts and memories. Then we watch it together and then talk about immediately what we liked and what we didn't like. Mm-hmm. We hadn't gotten to Batman Returns yet, but we had already talked about Batman. I know for him, our first memories for it is we saw the teaser in the theater. He and I used to go to movies a lot when we were younger. And when that first teaser hit, for Batman Returns. And the first thing is you see, it's like, you see the Warner Brothers logo come up and you kind of hear the Danny Elfman overtones. And then Batman starts climbing up the fire escape and you're like, oh, it's the new Batman. And then you see him starting to fight with Catwoman and butt whack, 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 whack. And then he gives her that one good belt and she falls down and she says, how could you? I'm a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm sorry. And then gets into the rest of it, but I remember us sitting there watching that. We were just like, "Oh, I can't wait! Like this is going to be the greatest thing ever." Yeah. So when Colin talked about this with me, I was discussing with him some of my favorite moments of my Batman fandom. One of which was because my fandom of Batman doesn't really kick off until like '89. Because when the film came out, that's when I really became a fan. I was sort of like I was sort of a sideline fan. For a while, where it's like, oh, you know, Adam West and Burt Ward is the only thing that we've had to this point. But in '87, I was reading Justice League, the newly rebooted Justice League, and Batman was in that book. And issue 5 of that has one of the greatest moments in Batman history, where he punches out Guy Gardner, the Green Lantern. Finally, after 5 issues of Green Lantern being a complete asshole on the team, questioning Batman's authority and everything else, until finally they're going to come down to fisticuffs to fight. And Gardner is like so arrogant. He's like, oh, I don't even need my ring to beat you. And Batman's like, oh, all bark and no bite. And Gardner's like, oh, I bite all right. I bite. And one of the most famous panels illustrated by Kevin Maguire is just this fist bonk into Gardner's nose. He's out like a light. And everyone else on the team is like, Blue Beetle is standing in the background, belly laughing, yelling, one punch, one punch. And it's like, at that point, it's like, oh, Batman's super cool. Like, this is great. You know, the movie comes out and my 13-year-old brain is going like, oh, this is so different from the Adam West stuff, because it's like those initial 89 trailers, it looked like Batman was killing people. Like, using his grappling gun, he shoots a guy and yanks them off the railing in the chemical plant. I thought he was straight up killing people. And for me, at 13 years old, I'm like, wow, this is going to be brutal. This is going to be so heavy. Whoa. Now, 91 or 92 comes around, the film, the Batman Returns comes out. We go and see it in theater. And it's like, this was good. I have some problems with this even at that time. Like, obviously, Catwoman was great. I love Danny DeVito as the Penguin. But there wasn't quite enough Batman. And I was like, I love the new design of the suit. This is really cool. Why is it taking place at Christmas? It's the middle of July. This feels weird. Whatever. Yeah. It's Tim Burton. I love Burton at this time. He's my go-to new like film guy. Yeah. I was nearly taken out of the film when the Penguin gets lured down to Max Schreck's little showcase of, you're going to be the mayor. And he tempts him with a raw fish. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, what? I thought he was like this criminal mastermind. Why is he being tempted with a fish? This doesn't make any sense. But it's like, okay, whatever. We're going to watch the movie. I saw the film, I think only just once in the theater. And then subsequently that summer, I would take these bike rides. And I've traveled to all of these different McDonald's to get the Collector Cup tie-ins. I wanted those cups. So I have a complete set of those. I'll send you a pic. You can showcase it on your socials
we'll
and things.
Post that for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, that was so it holds a special place for me. And that summer was just a great summer overall.
It was all Batman.
It was
like
all
I
Batman
said,
again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
It was just I got the magazines. I had the comic adaptation. I read that, and I was really, really getting into my Batman fandom. Like, I was reading Legends of the Dark Knight. That was the one title I collected because it was an anthology series. I didn't want to get caught up in
it. And you were showing us that you still have like so much of that stuff. Like, I'm jealous of that fact. Because mine's just gone missing in moves over the years. You know, I had the collector's cups, I had the toys, all that sort of stuff. Well, okay, Colin, what about you? I mean, we know your love for Batman. We've gone on a very unusual journey when it comes to Batman, having done Batman 66 and The Batman before even hitting the Schumacher one, and then it's Batman. What? Tell us why we're here. Like, tell us about Batman for you. Just refresh us and your history with this one in particular.
Right. Yeah, I'm a big Batman guy. I think this movie in particular, I was trying to think about my history with it, and what really stands out to me about this movie is the action figure line. I think for me, like when this movie came out, I would have been, I would have been like 6 years old. And like I had, I remember when Batman 89 came out, I was like, I wasn't old, I wasn't coherent, so I didn't like see that one. I actually saw Batman Returns prior to going back and then seeing Batman 89.
Okay.
That is bizarre. That must have been the weirdest feeling.
Well, we talked about this with like Batman 66. When my childish brain, they were all the same Batman to me. Like Batman was Batman. It didn't matter what order. Like I don't even think I, and you wouldn't really like pick up that like Batman Returns was after the Batman. To me, it was just, oh, a new story. Kind of like when you read a comic, it was, oh, it's a new story is happening. So it is always weird for me to look back at my childhood and think, oh, my immature brain somehow, I don't know, it just spliced everything together. There was no difference between Adam West and Michael Keaton. It was just Batman. Like, even I remember thinking, I had the superpowers line Penguin, and then the Batman Returns Penguin was unfortunately just a shitty repaint.
He was a repaint.
Repaint of that one. And I was like, oh, it's the same. Like, yeah, it's all the same. It's all the same. But what I remember is, like, with the 89 one, it's like you had the sweet Batman that had the clip belt that you could pull out and make him do a zip thing. But then, like the the Batman Returns... nice. There we go.
For this audio format, Lee stood up and grabbed the very Batman that Colin was talking about off his shelf. Nice. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
one.
Do you also have the like flower squirting Joker and the?
No. I don't have. The only reason
I wish I knew where my Batmobile was. I had one of the full size Batmobiles from the 89 Batman. No. It clicked the when you rolled it, like.
The only reason I even have that figure is for I got it as a gift from my pal Adam Smith, who happened to have a spare.
Oh, nice.
But he's a big Joker collector, so he has that flower squirting one that you're talking about, as well as the superpowers one where he has the big hammer, you know, that goes up and down and everything. So he's cool. That's the only reason I even have that one. I remember when the 89 one came out, and they were like. Originally, that figure, they advertised it just being talking about repaints. The superpowers Batman, it was supposed to be. It was just a repaint all black. I was looking forward to getting that one.
Yeah, then they changed the head. They changed the head sculpt for the.
Well, they changed everything about it. It was terrible. But that repainted one, you could get them down in Brazil.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they go for a dumb amount of money on eBay.
I remember like the Holy Grail figure that I wanted so badly for Batman Returns was. Like, my favorite scene of the movie was the bat glider, the big wings open up.
Yeah.
And they made a Batman. I actually have it now. It's upstairs. Unfortunately, I'm not like, I can't reach it.
No.
But they made it with the huge glider wings came out and his arms expanded. But the toy lineup was this is maintained now, but that was the first time where it wasn't just like one Batman, one of everything. It was like, 100 different Batmans with repaint. Like you had the Arctic Skidoo Batman, the Lightning Strike Batman, where he had like this like lightning pattern all over his costume. There's like a camo one. There was this like gold one that was really popular.
There was another one where you could like the Bruce Wayne figure where you could put the costume on him and stuff.
I love those ones. I actually in my like collector's mind, I have a dream of one day going back and collecting all the like Bruce Wayne to Batman figures for each of the movies. But
that's a good dream to have.
I also remember my mom for Christmas bought me the Batmobile that there was the 89 one that I remember you talking about, Sean, where it has like that plastic armor core that you could put on it.
Yeah, and the rockets, you push them down fenders. And...
You got me the 89 one that actually has the break apart, so it turns like you could replay that scene in this movie where he goes through the really narrow
turns into the bat missile.
Yeah.
That's what they called it, the bat missile.
The Batman Returns, when I think about this movie, in my mind, it was kind of just another Batman movie, but I remember being super stoked about all the toys that I got.
Well, then the movie did its job because that was essentially what the studio wanted. They wanted something that was going to move toys.
Yeah.
And that's why they gave Tim Burton carte blanche to do what he wanted. Because the only way they enticed him to even do the sequel was to tell him, hey, what if you just made a Tim Burton movie? And he went, oh? You mean I can just make it like what I want to do? And it's like, that's why he gets all wrapped up in like the social dynamics of like animal people.
Mm-hmm.
And puts it on at Christmas. He just done Edward Scissorhands, so he already made kind of his Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of carries over, right?
Yeah, but McDonald's was pissed when they saw the final product of this movie. Well, okay, I think this is officially the latest it's ever been before I've said this, but let's jump into Batman Returns, directed by Tim Burton, produced by Tim Burton and Denise DeNovi, and written by Daniel Waters, Sam Hamm. If your last name's Ham, don't name your kid Sam. Sam Ham. That's that poor kid. You know? And
sounds like a Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that would be worse would be like Honey Baked or something like that as a first name. Or you know, and also written by Bob Kane, who gets the character's credit. And I guess of course the argument should be made that Bill Finger could also have a credit in there, or should also have a credit in there.
Yeah, but at this point nobody even was talking about this. Like,
oh no, definitely not. No. That's why I like to bring it up in a modern podcast that you know can actually just make people aware of.
What's hilarious is that Bob Kane was like handing out like pieces of art he did for to like Tim Burton. It's like, here's a Bob Kane original. Huh? Did he do it? Because there are notorious stories of him like being asked to do some stuff, and he'll walk off down the hall. You know, whatever art studio he's at or whatever, and commission another guy to draw like him and then bring it back to editorial. So it's like, that's a whole other can of worms.
That's another podcast. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, like I said earlier, this was the Batman movie that was supposed to introduce us to Robin. And they had this idea to have Marlon Wayans as Robin.
That was actually even played with in the very first, the 89 movies, where they would like their early storyboards indicating that they would have had him in there for that. But then they ultimately scrapped that in favor of, oh, well, maybe save it for the next movie. And I was watching a behind the scenes featurette from the DVDs that came out a number of years ago for this movie. And they brought that up as part of the conversation, whether or not Robin was supposed to be in this as, like you said, with the trying to introduce that part again. And Burton just basically kiboshed it, saying, well, we've got too many characters already. We can't make this fit.
Yeah.
They tried thinking, well, maybe we can just make a little nod and keep it as a tease for the next one. But it was like, yeah, there's already too much in here already. Let's just do this story, which is convoluted already.
They wanted it as a standalone story as well. It's not actually a direct sequel.
No.
The only thing that really does tie it to the first movie are the couple of mentions of Vicky Vale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. Otherwise, it's its own story. And so that's also kind of an interesting way to look at this, especially when you start looking at the Schumacher movies as well, where it's like, well, they kind of seem like their own standalone stories as well. You know, like, on this viewing, it gave me a whole new perspective of the whole Batman saga. I mean, everyone always looks at these as, like, the classics, the untouchable ones and all that sort of stuff. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is actually almost a Schumacher Batman. I mean, you know, like, it's very campy. I never realized how fucking campy this movie
I'm really
was.
Glad you said that, because that was my... I was, like, listening to some of the dialogue, and I was like, where's the dark grittiness that everybody talks about in the Britain films? I'm like, but it's like with today's eyes, it's just, you know, it's not the Dark Knight and stuff.
But I remember the Dark Knight Rises, everyone was like, oh, it's so weird seeing Batman fight in the daytime. And it's like, he's fighting in the daytime this entire fucking movie.
Oh, no. It's nighttime. It's just super well lit.
Well, yeah. Like,
Gotham has the best streetlight system at night during snow, like all the time.
It's just the reflection of the white. Yeah, it absolutely is. Like, no, but it really is still. It's the illusion of daylight. Then, like, it is really not a shadow Batman. He's a well lit Batman.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if I watched, maybe I watched the same one you did, Lee, but I watched the a featurette, yeah. I guess, about Batman Returns as well. And the one thing I was struck by was just compared to how things seemingly work today. I'm not in Hollywood, but it's like everybody's looking for franchises. Mm-hmm. Whereas like back, like Tim Burton was, he was like, yeah, it's just, you know, maybe I'll do another one. Yeah. Like after they did Batman 89, it was like, oh yeah, we finished that one. It's done. And then they're like, oh yeah, we were kind of surprised when we got the call to
another
do, like,
one.
The next one, and we were wondering, like, how would we, like, what would we yeah. do? Like, I was like, what are you talking about? What do you do? It's Batman. There's a million things to do.
What strikes me so funny about that is the fact that these guys just, like, I don't know what it is. Like, when they tout about, you know, especially when the marketing comes out after the fact, you know, and then say, oh, yeah, they're a fan of this and blah, 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 and they love this character. But yet, when you actually get to, like, some, you know, retrospective interviews, and they talk about, yeah, well, you know, I kind of read this and I kind of knew that. And when they get to the screenwriters who have never read anything until they're given the assignment. And yeah. so they're always looking at it from a super, almost super fresh perspective in a lot of ways, yeah. which is good because it's like you at least then get a more original take on the material. But then they will make choices that sometimes goes against what you feel should be happening. Right.
Well, it was just, it's also funny when you look at things like Michael Keaton was, you know, they demanded $11 million for him. Tim Burton demanded $11 million saying he's worth it. It's like, well, yeah, he's fucking Batman. Or when you're going through the trivia on IMDb and it says, this is the first Batman movie where the villains don't have top billing. And it's like, well, yeah, the first one was a success. Yes, you're going to make another one.
Yeah.
Like, you. So it's just the idea of back then they didn't think about franchises. That's so true because it's a shocking thing to have Batman as the top billed person.
Well, they were interviewing Michael Keaton. He was like, they were just like, oh, well, we needed, like, the producers, like, we needed to have him back. And I was like, it was a question? Yeah. Like, it was a question whether he would come back to be Batman? Like, that's just so insane today's standards. Well, and then he's talking about it like, he was like, yeah, you know, like, I was doing my performances and I kind of just felt like I was trying to mimic myself from the first one. And he was like, he's like, talk about how he eventually just had to, like, view this movie as its own movie and, like, reimmerse himself in the character. And I was like, what?
Yeah, because he's as an actor, he's never had to go back and play the character again.
Like, yeah, that's what he said. He was like, I'd never played the same character twice. I was like, that is... And like, for that type of character is crazy. Times. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we don't talk about that one.
what's he going to do with Beetlejuice? I mean,
I think enough time has passed that it's just going to be like, all right, now I got something new to do. You know, he's just going to go get right into that.
That was a pretty good Beetlejuice right there. I like that one. Yeah.
I was also going to say, for anybody who wants a taste of what it would have been like if Robin was in these movies, Sam Hamm, he was the screenwriter for
Sam Hamm.
Yep.
Yeah, Sam, he was a screen. He wrote Batman 89, and then I think he wrote the first script for this one, but then it was massively rewritten, from what I gather.
Yeah.
He said they
threw out most of his stuff. It's primarily Daniel Waters, baby.
He wrote a 12-issue series for DC called Batman 89 that explores, like, what could have been, like, all the loose ends of Tim Burton's universe of what could have been. So it has, like, the Billy Dee Williams, Two-Face, the Marlon Wayans, Robin, and that kind of stuff. So
those first six issues, because the second volume is just coming out now. So so those first six issues, which deals with primarily the Two-Face angle, really cool. I really loved going back into how they explored that, especially a lot of the Easter eggs, all the Tim Burton Easter eggs, because it takes place at Halloween. So there's all these nods to The Nightmare Before Christmas and Beetlejuice and a bunch of other stuff all peppered throughout the book. It's a fun, fun romp.
Yeah.
I did find that in my research for, and by research, I mean, I watched the movies that made us for Nightmare Before Christmas to prepare for that podcast. I did find, like, the reason that is a Tim Burton Presents movie is because he was busy doing this movie.
So
he couldn't direct it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But the man loves Christmas. It's weird. Yeah. Like, he just loves Christmas.
Now that you point out that trifecta, I'm like, oh yeah, he's a Christmassy guy.
All that goth and everything, and yet he's a Christmas guy. But What about it?
Well, Colin, should we run down this cast list quickly?
Yes. I don't see why not.
Why not? Let's do it.
I mean, if people better buckle in, I feel like we might be here for like 3 hours. All right.
Not really.
Michael Keaton is Bruce Wayne, Batman.
Yep.
Danny DeVito is Oswald Cobblepot, Penguin. Michelle Pfeiffer is Selina Kyle, Catwoman.
Okay, this is the one that slows us down.
All right.
There we go. Yeah, so Annette Bening was originally cast, and then she went and got herself knocked up. Mm-hmm. So she had to drop out because, you know, slinky cat suit and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's when Michelle Pfeiffer got cast in there. But they did look at Sigourney Weaver, Brooke Shields, who was said to be not bankable, Gina Davis, who did League of Their Own instead, Susan Sarandon, who did Lorenzo's Oil instead, Sean Young, Lieutenant Einhorn from Ace Ventura there. She was the weirdo that showed up wearing a Catwoman outfit to try to get the job.
She burst into Mark Burton's office and Michael Keaton sitting there on the couch. And she bursts in and jumps over the couch and yells, "I am Catwoman!" And they're all like looking at her like...
She auditioned herself. Yeah, famously, yeah. And Madonna, Cher, Demi Moore, and briefly, they considered Meryl Streep as Catwoman. So there we go.
I have to give kudos to Sean Young because that sounds like an intensely embarrassing story.
But I
was impressed that she showed up for an interview in that featurette. The story.
Yeah.
She really wanted it, man.
Yeah.
It's an infamous story on the lot, man. You right from the source. Gotta love it.
Yeah. And then we got Christopher Walken as Max Schreck.
David Bowie was potential.
Oh no.
Oh. That would have been interesting. I could see that.
Oh no. No.
You can't.
Really?
I can see that. I can see that.
Bowie was considered for that? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like a fantasy casting to me.
It's just a different kind of weirdo. Well, no, because Bowie was up for the Joker, and he wasn't able to do the Joker, so when this came around, they offered him Max Schreck, and... maybe they offered him Max Schreck and he did something else instead. He couldn't do Max Schreck or something.
That's so funny. I did not know that. That's about as crazy as like looking at early production sketches of concept sketches for the Joker. And some of the, because I remember seeing these in the trading card set, and I swear, and I know this has got this has some merit to it, that Prince lobbied to be the Joker in Batman 89 because some of those drawings look like him.
Yeah. Oh, probably. Which and instead they just gave him the entire soundtrack.
Right. Yeah. He gets to wear half the makeup in the Bat Dance video.
That's what was missing out of this movie is where's the one musical artist that has the entire fucking soundtrack?
Oh, no, you don't get that. You get the single Face to Face. What's the name of the artist? I have it open here. Hang on. I'm going to the bottom. What's the song? Oh, was it Susie and the Banshees?
It doesn't be Kiss from a Rose. That's all I'll say. Rounding out the cast, we have like the through line of, I guess, the Burton Schumacher verse. Michael Goff is Alfred Pennyworth, and Pat Hingle as James Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Was so disappointed that he like has almost nothing to do in this movie.
Oh yeah,
dude, it's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Pat Hingle,
filming. You know, like that's
Pat Hingle's Commissioner Gordon is so like far. Like I think that was one of the things. His Commissioner Gordon is very reminiscent of the 66 Gordon, but so different from like the Commissioner Gordon that you see in the actual comics. Like I'm curious to know how that even happened.
If you look at those early like Silver Age books, like Gordon's a plump guy. Like he's a big. He's a big dude. Yeah. Like the ones we get later in the 80s where he's more lean and like the one that Jim Aparo would render, right? He looks like a normal, more physically fit guy who just smokes a lot.
Yeah.
But no, he was originally, he was a plumpier guy. So I think they were kind of going for that. But yeah. But I mean, Hingle's performance in 89 was like, he at least feels like an authoritative guy, you know, when he comes in, it's like, what's going on here? What are you trying to blow our cover? I'm not, it's like, I'm in charge here, not Carl Grissom.
And this one, he just comes in, is like, stop shooting!
Yeah, stop shooting! And it's like, what are you waiting for? The signal! It's like, we can't handle anything. The police force, we're useless. We have nothing we can contribute except for our cars blowing up and getting smashed by the Batmobile. And yeah, arbitrarily just shooting when we haven't got any clue as to what's happening.
No. Yeah. And then honorable mention for Paul Reubens and Diane Salinger is
yes,
the Cobblepot parents.
Yeah. 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 And both of them having appeared in a previous Tim Burton movie, both of them being in Pee-wee's Big Adventure together.
That's correct. Yes.
So reunited in this movie. They did ask Burgess Meredith to come in as Daddy Cobblepot.
Hmm.
Yeah, and he was ill at the time, and it prevented him from doing it. But they did try to get him in.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Would he have found him in like a resting home or something like that? Because he would have been ancient still at that time.
Whatever. So same thing that Paul Reubens did, just with older parents, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that would have been weird.
Yeah,
or been like maybe De Niro style parenting.
Yeah, oh. Or maybe they would have gotten Granddaddy Cobblepot in there as well.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like he was already ancient and like Rocky, you know. And it's like,
yeah,
the guy, I mean, what? Like he was in Grumpy Old Men around that, like shortly after all of that, right? Yeah. And you just see how old he was there. It's just like, oh dear God, like, yeah, his health was not in the best of times. Yeah. He would have had to have been like the older version or something. Fun little thing I heard, a theory. Is that, you know, the scene where the Cobblepots are taking Oswald to dump him into the river.
Yeah.
Which is a horrific fate.
Yeah, it is.
They pass this other, like, couple with their baby, and there's the pleasantry, Merry Christmas. Somebody threw out this theory that, oh, that's the Waynes.
That's the Waynes.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a weird little crossings of, you know, fate, sort of. Their face
I can
being,
make that headcanon. I'm okay with that.
You know, it's kind of neat.
Yeah. I have one more shout out for cast list as well. Doug Jones. I love shouting out when Doug Jones shows up in a movie.
Is he part of the circus gang?
He is down there at the bottom. This is one of his first real breakout performances. Before this, he had done like In Living Color and a couple other things, but yeah, this was kind of like his first big deal movie was. He's one of the circus performers. Oh, and of course, awesome. Vincent Schiavelli as well. We saw him in Ghost.
He was
the Subway Ghost, yeah.
Yeah.
So
the Calliope player with the machine gun.
Yeah. Give him a shout out as well.
The guy who runs our show.
Now, okay, here's the question. Since you're talking about it, we have the Cobblepots killing their infant, or trying to dispose of their infant. Doesn't Gotham City, even this Gotham City, doesn't it still have a bay or something? Somewhere that would be a better water source for drowning your infant? I mean, this is not a very good disposal spot.
No, it leads right to the zoo.
Yeah. Well, and even if the baby gets lost in the sewers, I mean, those are places that people go. Why aren't you throwing them off a bridge into the Gotham Harbor?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It is kind of strange. That was one thing I noticed while watching this movie, is that as huge as Gotham City is supposed to be, this movie felt very confined.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. And I don't know if that's just a limitation of the production values of the time. You know, because like you're supposed to have these great big sets of the city and whatever else, but it's like everything revolved around the city square, where the Christmas tree was, where the department store was, and they all seemed to be with like a stone's throw away of each other, right? It was like watching a musical in a way,
mm-hmm. a little bit.
So it's like you don't really get a sense of scale with the city, except for maybe two or three effect shots, right?
Yeah,
but where all the action takes place, it feels very confined. And so it's like when they're going through the park, it's like, oh, well, I guess maybe they aren't anywhere near a large, you know, they didn't go to the dock, you know, because they're right on a water line, mm-hmm. right? You kind of see that at the beginning of the movie. So it's like, why not? Yeah, like you say, dump them somewhere else. Maybe the Cobblepots just didn't know where that river line went. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, they're pretty pale. Maybe they're not like fans of the beach.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, even in the winter. Yeah, and then we get 33 years later. So you're telling me Danny DeVito's 33? That's what this movie is telling me. I mean, you know, okay, sure, we've got like freakish Birdman. I can look past that. 33. Yeah. Come on. But Danny DeVito had to be
at least.
How old
was he at the time? That's a question.
He had to be almost 50. Like, I think he just turned 80.
Hmm.
I saw, like, I follow Rob McElhenney, so I'm pretty sure Danny DeVito is...
Yeah, he's 79 right now.
79, yeah. So 30 years ago, yeah, I mean, he was 49, so, I mean, okay. I guess you're going to age him down by a dozen or so years.
Well, he's under a lot of prosthetic makeup. Why not?
I suppose so.
You know. he's got the libido of a 19-year-old in the movie. I mean, that's just...
Very, very secretive prosthetic makeup, though. Like, yeah. That's the thing. He wasn't even allowed to tell his family what the final design looked like. And that is why you have the Super Friends repaint. Because they didn't want to reveal, and because he was terrifying, those were the two factors in doing the Penguin repaint instead when it came to the action figures, is because they didn't want the spoiler. I mean, how many movies have characters, cameos that are spoiled these days because they decide to release them in the toy line?
Before the movie comes out. It's like... Yeah.
They kind of did the same thing with Mr. Freeze and Batman and Robin. The original Mr. Freeze figure that came out looked nothing like the Arnold Schwarzenegger one, and then later they re-released a version after the movie had come out with that looked like him.
So apparently there's a picture of Max Schreck with Arnold Schwarzenegger somewhere in his office. I didn't spot it, but I read that in my trivia.
I saw that last night. I thought I recognized something with that because I hadn't noticed it before. But no, it is there.
Now, is it Arnold Schwarzenegger or is it Victor Freeze? Like, I know Victor Freeze was nowhere on the roadmap at all at this point, but, you know, headcanon, is that Schreck and Freeze?
No, it's a wall full of different celebrities that Max Schreck has met. There's a bunch. Because I know one of them's like Eddie Murphy.
Victor Freeze, though, I mean, he was a big deal scientist.
Yeah, but it's
so
a picture.
That would be worthy of.
It's a picture of Schwarzenegger from, like, you know, pumping iron. He's got his
long
hair.
He's like holding weights over his head.
It's that young Arnold where he's talking about, you know, working out is like, you know, you do it so well, you do it so often. It's like making. I'm not going to say it. It's kind of vulgar. But
for
know,
me,
it's just...
Victor Freeze. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. It's...
Well, there's a lot of snow in it. Sure, make it Victor Freeze. That's the one. That's your 6 degrees of separation right there. You know.
Yeah.
To keep it all ahead, canon.
Yeah.
So I love Christopher Walken in this movie, because I mean, you know, you say that David Bowie would have actually been a fun casting, but I mean, Max Schreck is completely made by Christopher Walken.
Oh yes,
yeah.
He, you guys were right off the hop. Like, he gets overlooked, I think, because you have the like title bat villains. Yeah. But he really is the actual overarching villain of the entire movie.
Yes.
And I don't think I ever really realized that until this watch.
Yeah. He's John Turturro. That's who he is. He's, you know, he's pulling all the strings. You know.
I never realized throughout the movie he never takes off his gloves.
Huh.
He wears gloves all the time, which makes it cuz nobody else aside from the Penguin,
even the Penguin takes his gloves off.
Penguin takes his gloves off, you know, but it's like Schreck, his gloves are on all the time. It's just freaky. It's like maybe he doesn't like to touch people. You know, he feels he's above them or something.
Oh.
Something like that.
Here we go.
What did
he has so to come jealous. Back?
Curiosity due to the cat. I'm no cat. I'm just a lowly secretary and a very good one. You know.
Can you do the speech when he forgets his notes?
I was like, forgot my speech. Remind me to take it out on what's the name? Santa Claus, Fregnot. I'm just a poor schmo, got lucky. So sue me if I want to give something back. I just wish I could give more than expensive baubles. I would hand out world peace and unconditional love wrapped in a big bow.
Oh, finally! A worthy walk-in on this show. You know, what's funny is I had considered throwing an I used to like this one piece theater at us, but I think we just got it.
Oh, there you go. Bruce, for shame. You know, was it,
that's like the that's only one I could do.
That's not a surplus, that's a mild swelling.
Bruce Wayne, what are you doing dressed up as Batman?
Because he is Batman, you moron. You mean was.
Was.
See now, if this movie had been directed by William Friedkin, then Bruce Wayne would have been shot in the head, and that would have been the end of Batman. It would have been to live and die in L.A. all over again.
That's gotta just, go for the head.
Gotta go for the, like honestly, Endgame. Like he was right, point blank range practically, and he's still. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean this.
We're jumping ahead.
This movie really shows how shitty Batman's armor actually is.
To rip off the cowl
rubber. Yeah, and like just how easily she can stab him in his side. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they made such a big deal in the first one about, wait a minute, this seems like some kind of bulletproof armor.
Yeah, body armor.
Yeah,
but she can get through it with like thimbles and screws, paper clips, and nails. It's like, what the heck?
It's not a very good suit. Yeah, that, and when he tears the cowl off, that was definitely one of those moments where I'm like, well, come on. But like Colin mentioned in his 60-second synopsis, of course we've got the magic eyeliner that disappears.
I tried to make that work in my head for so long because I'm like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, what happened? Where does eyeliner go? Oh wait, maybe his cowl's got some special filter that goes over top and it darkens it, and then he just kind of turns it off, thinking like, you know, like it's an Iron Man thing. It's like, it ain't. It's just lazy filmmaking.
If I'm honest, that's one of the things I respect most about Robert Pattinson and the Batman is like that is clearly how it works.
He like, takes the cowl off, he's got all this makeup on his face.
Yeah, like, why? And I honestly, like, because, I mean, while Selena's, like, her makeup is just wet and all over, but she's got this whole smoky eye thing going. Like, I just think it would have looked so much cooler if he took it off and had the blank.
Yeah.
It just might have, honestly, maybe they tried it that way.
I wonder if they did. I would love to see if there's a... like a deleted scene where they went for it. Maybe it just looked like absolute shit.
It's like, man, they're like, we can't do it. He needs a nap. Bruce Wayne needs a nap. He's got these dark circles under his eyes.
He would look like he belongs in Mad Max with some painted on mask. You know, that's what it
is. He's trying Fury Road. He says, what a glorious day. Yeah. Just spray paint his teeth.
Yeah. Well, and while we're on the subject of black shit around the eyes, what's the black shit that comes out of Penguin's mouth?
I've no idea.
I've always wondered that.
I think it's blood, but I don't know.
No, because he bleeds red.
He does bleed red. Yeah, because at the end he's all scratched up and shit, and he is bleeding red.
But it's like it oozes out his nose and it oozes out his mouth. But granted, like early on when you see him and he's talking, and he's just like he spit talks, right? Because he's got these, you know, he's got the prosthetics, you know, for his teeth, right? So I'm sure you can't even help that.
Stained black, so is it just because they're stained black that they're like, well, fuck it, we'll just pretend it belongs.
He's got mercury poisoning,
maybe.
Yeah,
like he's
well,
he's
Shrek poisoning. Apparently,
he's supposed to be a monstrous freak. So it's like, did Shrek's like chemicals, like all the toxic waste and stuff, is that what made him a like, was he born a freak as a result? Like,
I'm wondering. Some sort of deformity because of it. Yeah, did they live right by the water that he was dumping into?
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I did read that there was an idea in one of the early versions of the script that Shrek was going to be his older brother.
Yes. Yeah. I do recall that. Yeah.
Which that would be an interesting. Yeah. I mean, it would help explain a little bit more about why he takes him under his wing,
or why even Cobblepot
targets
him,
intended.
Right? Yeah, well, takes him under his wing. I can get you all this power. I can get you officials, money, even Poontang. All right, you drive a hard bargain. I'll be mayor. Burn, baby, burn.
Well, what else does Shrek do other than own a department store?
Well, apparently he's got some sway over the municipality.
He's like an industrial, like a, yeah, he's some sort of like...
He's like a big deal industrialist somehow, because he's like, I'm going to build a power plant. Because apparently he can just do that.
Yeah.
He has this whole like actual Bond villain plan to like... To like create a power plant that sucks power, because
it's a power plant Gotham, in name Gotham only. It's a capacitor.
Has an electricity. Yeah, Gotham has an electricity surplus that apparently nobody knows about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's so easy to hide that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, and apparently he owns like half the fire traps in Gotham City. Like,
yeah, you just gotta like throw some leaves over it or something.
Yeah,
you know, you can't see it then.
You can't see it. Well, he just shreds all the stuff, and then he like disposes of people who apparently just go on extended vacation and never come back.
Yeah,
it's like, do they have any families? Do we know anything about them?
Whatever you flush down the toilet ends up on my mantelpiece.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, I love that. You remember me? I'm Fred's hand.
That is a great line. Yes.
Remember, Max. Yeah. You flush it. I flaunt it.
I can't believe, like, just how dark they... Like, I mean, ultimately, okay, so... it's not that dark, but I am impressed with how dark they actually do go, with severed hands and people getting their noses bitten off and, you know...
Would you follow a guy to become mayor once you watched him bite a dude's nose off in The Office?
No.
So why, doubt it, yeah. Why does that even still happen? Like, I... whatever.
Yeah.
That is one of the crazy things about this movie that they bring up in that feature is considering the amount of coy marketing that went into it, like, this isn't a movie for children.
No, and they never hid the fact that it was for, like, it wasn't for children.
No,
they
yeah,
never,
they didn't.
They never hide it. They straight up, this is how we're marketing it. But because that first movie, the toy tie-in still worked, we're going to get the same thing from Burton Wright. No, you're not. You're not.
One thing I've always found funny about this movie, it makes me laugh every time I watch it, is even though it is a cool scene when we first see Bruce Wayne just sitting on his chair and the light shines and you get to see him in the silhouette of the light, but it's just the idea that he's just like sitting in the dark alone waiting on a night, like, are they going to call?
Yeah. Okay. And then Wayne Manor. he's waiting by the phone.
He's just
I left three messages.
Should I call? I don't know.
he even went so far as to have special reflective dishes on his house.
About to say. Even though he lives in the middle of nowhere, isn't that still a little bit obvious?
Nobody's driving by being like, that guy must really like Batman.
Why is Wayne Manor all lit up? That's weird. Yeah, big
but
fan over here.
It's the fact that they actually have the bat symbol on them. To reflect it down into the one room. Yeah. I'm like, okay, you want to pass it off as maybe there's solar panels. Maybe he's environmentally conscious already. Yeah.
Well,
but
I'm not,
you have a bat
not
symbol
Batman.
In the middle of it. I'm not Batman. I'm just a fan. I help relay the message to him. It's not me.
It's like the Great Wall of China almost, how they used to light the torches in the little thing and then they'd send it off. That's how they'd send a signal. That's how the bat signal works.
As bat shit as like the reflectors on the outside of his house are, one of my favorite moments is the part where he takes off his jacket, rolls up his sleeve, reaches into the fish tank to activate the special door, and then like says to Alfred, "You coming?" He goes, "I'll take the stairs." And then Alfred arrives like 5 seconds after he does, after he slides down this very lengthy process to get into the Batcave. You're in better shape. You would have been down there much faster than Alfred.
And if he was asking Alfred to get into the Iron Maiden with him, I mean. Mm-hmm. There's not much room in there.
No, there wasn't.
So, what?
This is the same man that can scratch a CD like a record, though. So
that was hilarious.
Oh my gosh!
And honestly, you gotta wonder how much ingenuity do you need to have to know that you need a CDR, like a machine, in your Batmobile just in case the Batmobile gets hijacked, so that you can record whoever's on the other end their nefarious dialogue to showcase to everybody.
It's the same amount of ingenuity you need to have shark repellent spray in your helicopter.
That's true. That's very true.
So it's Batman. That's all it is.
Did you ever wonder, though, like, like it's as soon as like the plan comes into fruition about, you know, we're going to disassemble his Batmobile and turn it into an H-bomb on wheels. Like, where'd you get the plans? Who? Like, who? Where
yeah, how did you get those blueprints?
How did you get the blueprints? Like,
they pieced together a bunch of photographs that have been taken of the Batmobile.
What?
There was, what black? Or maybe, like, I mean, I guess Bruce Wayne commissioned that car somewhere.
Now, as Alfred but, I mean, maybe said, they, maybe... you can't just take it to Joe Mechanic, though.
Right. Yes. Right? It's like, who works on the car? Bruce works on the
Vicky
car
Vale
himself.
Into the Batcave. I'm sitting there working, and I look
he's
up, oh, hey, Vic.
Yeah. He's talking about security, and I'm like thinking, it's like, seriously, and they just walk, like the circuit scan, just walk up with this goofy remote, hit the button, and the whole security shield comes apart. It's like, what? Well, but that's supposed to be impenetrable. How do you do that?
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure they didn't build this car from the ground up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The CG on the cocoon, though, was not too bad,
It was a huge improvement over the weird animation that they had in 89.
Yeah,
I think. So.
Yeah, I was surprised at how good that actually looked. I realized that the key is to only show sections of the Batmobile so that you're not kind of seeing the whole overall thing.
Yeah.
So they didn't have very many, you know, huge, like, establishing shots of it. But, yeah, it was decent. Good job, 92. Yeah.
I'm also still blown away by how cool Michael Keaton can be as Batman, but how... like nerdy grandpa he looks as Bruce Wayne sometimes.
Did you notice in this movie that he actually had a little bit of gray in his temples?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that before until watching it again.
Well, I was trying to decide whether it was gray or whether it was just because of how it was shaved.
Yeah.
But, like, it was skin showing through, right? Like
I like to think it maybe it's just a little bit of gray.
A little bit of gray. Yeah. Old man Batman.
Old man Batman. Because that's something that carries over into the Ben Affleck version. Right?
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or the George Clooney version.
Yeah. Here we are talking about Batman and Penguin and everything else. We haven't really talked a lot about...
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Like, well, you know, actually, first, I know who we're going to be talking about. The weirdest segue ever, I want to talk about Sponsorship Corner.
Sponsorship Corner,
yes. This is our segment because always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Batman Returns is brought to you by Belvedere Sewing Machines, Omega Stun Guns, Wilson Sporting Equipment, Canon Cameras, and Polar Smoked Oysters. Plus the fictional WXRX Radio, Gotham Globe Newspaper, National Bank of Gotham, Bat-O-Ride, and Shrek's Department Store. Now, this is why I wanted to bring this up, because we're about to talk about Catwoman and you know, her descent into madness. At one point, when she is making her new Catwoman suit, she dumps out a bunch of supplies onto her table. Now, there is a plastic box, which is labeled VSI. This one made my brain melt, okay? VSI is possibly a sewing machine company. So this would be like supplies for you know, maybe spools of thread or something. Or if it's actually VS1, then it's actually a model of Singer sewing machine. Mm-hmm. So again, a sewing accessory. But in this part of the montage, this is just before she starts like clipping the wire. I imagine it's for her bodice or whatever. So it could be tool related. So this VSI is too specific to not be real. But I don't know what the fuck it was, but I spent like half an hour researching this box, trying to figure out what this was, but something called VSI. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
And here I thought you were actually going to do like a, we have to take a break now and thank our sponsors for.
Oh yeah, like, you know. Yeah, I've got like, yeah, HelloFresh or none of that. No.
Or did you didn't even mention Gotham Lady Perfume. Come on, that was all over her answering machine.
Yeah, but it was only talked about.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay, let's talk Selina Kyle. Now, I want to know, This is my number one question with Selena Kyle. When she gets pushed out of the window, that's an awfully flimsy window for that high up, I have to say. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she crashes to the ground, and the cats start, like, doing whatever. What are the cats doing?
I always assumed they were, like, just, they were nibbling on her because they were back alley cats and were looking for a meal.
But see, I get the impression just from how the movie is shot. Yeah. That she's being, like, imbued with superpowers at that moment. I mean,
yeah, it is weird.
Yeah, with Poison Ivy, it makes sense. She gets sucked into the dirt. She becomes part of Mother Earth and all that sort of stuff. She's not actually getting any, like, kind of cat powers. What? Why the descent into madness the way it is? Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, the brain damage aspect of things works because she fell.
I guess
damaged her brain.
Yeah, she broke her brain.
Like, there is that. Yeah. That's what I like attribute that. The cat motif is just weird. Like I know from Burton's discussion about it. I mean, he wanted to get the audience to try to doubt whether or not if this was like a supernatural thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just this. It's symbolic, right? So in terms of a filmmaker's craft, it's like, how do we symbolically show that she's becoming Catwoman? So we'll just have all these cats just come out of nowhere and just start, I don't know, doing something to her. It's never entirely clear, right? But we've already established earlier she's got this Miss Kitty that comes in and visits her all the time. So maybe she's just the local cat lady. All these cats know her. And somehow just, oh, she's in trouble. We got to do something.
Yeah.
The fact that she fell that amount and then she goes through, what, like four different awnings?
Yeah.
You know, and which cushions her fall so she doesn't actually just explode on impact.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be fair. In this movie, anybody who falls from a great height just doesn't die unless it's near the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you belly flop into the water. And that's
and Christopher Walken's moment when he's about to push her, when he does the, huh? Yeah. And then turns and pushes her out the window. I mean, yeah, like. He is a great creepy guy. I love creepy Shrek.
So now, Colin, you said you didn't see this movie in the theater, did you?
No, okay. I saw this movie on VHS.
And Sean, where did you see it first?
Oh, I saw it in theaters.
You saw it in theaters. Now, I want to ask you this question, because I remember, and maybe I'm mixing this up because of the different versions I've exposed myself to of this movie, like with the film, having seen it in theater, plus the comics adaptation, plus the novelization.
That could muddy the waters.
It could. Yeah. but I feel like I remember seeing this in the theater. The moment after Shrek pushes her out the window, before we cut to her laying there on the pavement,
yeah,
there's a moment where he turns around and his son Chip is standing in the doorway. And he's like, oh shit, did you just see what I did kind of thing? Like, and he's almost having to say, like, oh wait, he's trying to figure out an excuse. And Chip says, she fell. Like, he's already covering for his dad, just to show that Chip's on board. He's like, I know what you're doing, and I'm cool with it. Thanks, Dad. It's like, yeah. Just to show how far the corruption goes, right? It's just a little thing. I remember that being in the movie. It's in the comic book adaptation, I know for sure, because I just revisited that. And I'm pretty sure it's in the novelization. So at some point, I'm sure it's in the screenplay. But I know this has happened before, where it's like a film gets released in theaters. And then something gets talked about in, before it gets released on home video. And then there'll be either shit missing or stuff has changed. Another example of that is like, if you ever saw Disney's Aladdin in the theater, the opening song, there's a different lyric in, you know, at the beginning that got changed later in subsequent releases of the soundtrack as well as home video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, like, the line is like, where the sand is immense and the heat is intense, it's barbaric, but hey, it's home.
Yeah.
The original line is where they cut off your hands if they don't like your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, that's the Disney Plus, effect. You know, it's digitally adding hair to Daryl Hannah to cover her ass and splash. I mean,
it's just weird.
It's all these things that are being done.
It's
Greedo
shooting first.
Yes.
My favorite is the new Little Mermaid, though, where Kiss the Girl has changed to be very consensual in one of the lyrics that never used to be. Yeah.
Ask the girl. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, it's one of the lines. Yeah, went from okay, it's no longer forcing upon. You're now kind of asking for consent. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just, it's just one of those things where it's like as soon as I got the VHS and I watched it, and I went, wait a minute, something's missing. Like where did that go? Because that was, because, I mean, Chip, you already can tell he's an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, Dad.
Dad, go. Save
that,
yourself.
That should have been Schwarzenegger right there. Dad.
Well, he
it's
he
time
actually,
to bring joy to the masses.
I'm sitting there wondering, like, is this guy kind of doing an off-brand Christopher Walken?
Oh,
like, because he kind of talks like him in a way.
He,
I mean,
he does, yeah. Yeah. But he was, that guy was awful.
Well, yeah, he is.
Dad, go, save yourself. Dad, go.
Just, yeah, bad New York accent.
My wife sat down and watched it with me, and it was just funny. She saw that scene, and then when Shrek bolts, she's like, what a horrible father.
Anyways, back to Selena Kyle.
Oh, Selena.
Back to,
Selena,
yes,
Selena,
yes,
Selena, Selena.
You are
I
just the pussy I've been looking for.
Oh my gosh.
How about that line, eh? Couldn't believe that. Seeing that in the theater? Everyone in the theater, like, there was, like, nervous laughter when that came up. It was just like, oh my God. Like, because at that point, you know the movie is no longer for children.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, she has one of my favorite introductions is when she comes flipping out of the building,
yes.
You know, meow, boom.
Boom.
That's such a great fucking entrance. Like, that's one of the best entrances ever. How does Selena Kyle know how to fight so well? That's the other reason why I was wondering, like, did the cats give her power? Because her first night out, you know, she even says, oh, goody, you're my first to the guy.
It's my
and
first
then, like,
time.
Actually kicks some ass. Like, has Selena Kyle been taking self-defense on the weekends?
We don't see. The only sporting thing that, like, the only athletic thing that we know of is that she should have let that dude win at racquetball. Right? She mentions there's that guy that is no longer going to take her out for the holidays or whatever, and she's like, oh, I should have let him win that last game of racquetball. So maybe she's just super athletic and, you know, plays off timid, right?
Yeah, what she knows about racquetball, she somehow, it's the whole Karate Kid theory, right? You know, she somehow translates that into kicking some ass.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it's kind of consistent with her character, because I feel like what I get from the character of Selena Kyle is that she's like a repressed, like she's, or maybe not even repressed, but like oppressed female. Like,
oh, she absolutely
like,
is. Yeah.
She's oppressed by all the men in her life, by the expectations of her parents, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And like, I think the whole cat woman, like, mental breakdown is like, now she's unleashed upon the world.
Hello there to hell here.
Yeah. I don't understand the spray paint though. I don't understand the sink disposal of
the destruction of innocence.
I want to say garburator, but that doesn't work.
It's a garburator.
No, but it doesn't work with international listeners. But garbage disposal, that's the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. 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 It's amazing how quickly all of those stuffed toys went down, though. You know,
but like when she dumps out all her stuff onto the table and it's just like, God, it would be so much easier to find if you just didn't dump it out. Aren't you going to be annoyed later on? It's just going to make you madder when you can't find the thing you need.
That gives you the motivation. I'm just surprised she had as much fabric in that raincoat to make that full bodysuit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And the fact that it's designed to look like it's stitched on, how did she get into that thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's like top, that's top five, I feel, most recognized. Like, when I think about a costume, that Catwoman, like, that, I feel like that Catwoman costume to me, like, defines the character of Catwoman.
Yeah, she was broken.
Like, even when I think of, like, comic versions of Catwoman, I still see, like, I feel like I view the comic version of Batman as more Batman than any movie one I've seen. But I feel like the Batman Returns Catwoman suit is what I always want to see when I see Catwoman on screen.
Yeah.
Like, I even remember watching the animated series and being, like, disappointed in the Catwoman costume in that series because it wasn't this one.
Well, this one is so, so sexualized. I mean, that's just the thing, right? It's shiny. It's got that whole vinyl, you know, look to it. And when she moves around, you can hear it, like, rubbing and stuff. It's just
it's famously one that she had to keep getting stitched into.
Yeah.
And then after a number of takes. Breaking. Yeah. But after a number of takes, they would have to loosen some stitches. Otherwise, she would pass out.
Yeah.
So I mean, nuts. You know, it's yeah, there's not much costume. I mean, you know, with the fact that Marvel costumes these days, you know, they're a little thicker, they digitally remove wrinkles and everything like that. No, they had to get this one tight.
Oh yeah.
And live on screen tight.
Yeah. How about her the fact that she puts a live bird in her mouth?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, and she did that because like none of the dummy birds they had looked real enough to her. So she's like, I'll just do it with a real fucking bird.
And she did it several times, according to Burton. She did it many times.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, that's amazing. The fly in our ointment. 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 Oh, you know, scented or unscented?
Yeah, Danny DeVito throws a lot of very crude things out in this movie. Like, you know, I noticed so many more on this viewing, you know?
Yeah, the interviews that I saw with Michelle Pfeiffer about this movie when she would talk about him, because apparently she, like, went method for this one, method, so she stayed as Penguin the entire time. And you could tell, like, in the interviews, she's trying to, like, stay professional, but she looked clearly uncomfortable. Like, it just didn't seem like it was a pleasant working situation.
Well, and you're the hottest young person.
A role model.
Like, that,
here,
yeah,
wear a button. It's about, oh, I can really get into this mirror stuff. It's about reaching out to people, touching people, groping people.
Danny DeVito mentioned at one point that he actually tried to lick her.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he kept trying to lick her.
But instead, it's Batman that gets it from Catwoman, and oh, my God, yeah. that's still one that gets me tingling when I see that one, where it's like, okay, you can lick me.
You was there an intimacy me. Coordinator on that scene? I wonder.
Oh, I don't know about you know, that just, one.
But just, yeah. I love how after she does it, like, Batman just stops for a minute and kind of licks his own lips.
He licks his lips, yeah.
Oh, Like, Oh, jeez.
One of my favorite Batman lines in this one is still, eat floor, high fiber. I don't know why. Just eat floor has always made me laugh.
Oh, yeah. You know, the one thing I also like about this is when if you were to go through each of those original four Batman films, it's like if you could highlight a signature line from each of the villains, right? So it's like the Joker is obviously like, you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And in this one, it's like you don't think you'll really win, do you?
Things change.
You know, things change. You know, and then Catwoman is obviously like that meow. You know, just that signature bit.
I'm going to give myself a bath. Right.
Give myself a bath right here. Oh my God. I love that. I love that scene. Just when like Batman, he's out in the street and he sees Cobblepot standing there. And it's like admiring your handiwork. And they just have that brief little exchange. And it's like upstanding mayor stuff. You're not the mayor. Things change.
Yeah.
You know, it's just they're sizing each other up. And it's just really, really cool.
Well, even the fact that he calls Shrek out as Bruce Wayne as well, where he's like, I know you're behind this. I know you're up to some dirty shit, right?
Yeah, like I don't have a crime boss in my corner like Cobblepot. And it's like, crime boss?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Oswald's Gotham's new golden boy. Yeah. You two could have been buddies at prep school.
Yeah, even though this movie is like, well, they keep saying like it's more of a Burton movie, Burton-esque movie, I guess. I like the dynamic of Batman with the villains slightly more than I liked it in Batman 89. Like, I like that they have this little like repartee and like you get to see them interacting more because I felt in
and it's not. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts! That's the only interaction they really have in the first one.
The first one's a straight-up revenge movie where it's like, I made you, you made me first. Yeah. So it's like, it's a revenge movie.
I would also argue that the top villain line of the first one is, this town needs an enema! You know, because that's what starts off the bat dance, you know?
There you go.
Sorry, Colin, I cut you off there.
I know, I was just going to say, like, as much as I love Jack Nicholson and I love the Joker, the only kind of scene where they have a back and forth is when he shows up at the restaurant to save Vicky, kind of. from what I remember.
It's not even so much an interaction, though. He shows up, he grabs Vicky, points the giant grappling gun in his face, and you think, oh my god, what's he going to do with his head? And then he runs away, and then the Joker says, where does he get those wonderful toys? And right. they don't even talk to each other. Not till like the end.
Yeah, I guess
the movie.
Not till the end. Yeah, I like that in this one. It's throughout. I was a little bit taken aback because I didn't realize how fast it goes from Catwoman and Penguin decide to team up to the execution of the plan, the Batman unraveling the plan. Like when I was younger, it seemed like there was a lot of time in between all those events, but it's really it all happens in like 15 minutes. It seems like.
Oh yeah, it's well. This is the different way of making movies from then and now, where it's like we're expecting these 2.5 hour epics with or these TV series that have these long drawn out plots so that you can figure out what's going on. Whereas here, it's just like it was like one of the comments we made about like the timeline of how things move in Batman 89, where it was like, how fast does this go? Yeah. It's like, is it like it happens in a matter of days? Should it be over a course of months, weeks? Like it's never entirely clear. And here it just feels like, well, it all has to take place in December. So it's at least within 30 days, but it feels like it takes place all within the span of like a week or maybe 2 weeks.
They make Batman out to be a villain for like a hot minute. Like the police don't even have time to execute a full on manhunt for the Batman in this movie before he already proves that he was okay.
No, but they take the word of some guy who shouts, look, Batman pushed the princess. Yeah. And suddenly they're going up to the roof and it's like, oh, there he is. Shoot him immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. On site.
Yeah. Don't look behind the door where Cobblepot's hiding. Yeah. And apparently you can just get bats from anywhere, you know, and keep them in an umbrella and have them fly out or have them all hiding in the tree.
Well, the in the tree was one. The one that got me, and I had to watch this like four times, is the one towards the end where Batman shows up in his whatever jet ski, his bat skidoo,
his bat seadoo.
Yeah. So when they've got their crash landing there where he crushes the dock and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Then there's like a hatch that opens on the skidoo. And a bunch of bats fly out, and that's like is that where they came out? That's why I had to rewind it three times. Did they come out of Batman's vehicle? Like, was he carrying a trunk full of bats?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where they came from.
This is now in his weapons. Look out, Batman will come at you with live bats.
I mean, he does that in Batman Begins too. He has that little sonar thing that calls all the bats to him.
That's true.
But that made sense because they came from outside of wherever, right?
But still, it's well established.
Like, can you imagine him like stuffing them all into the trunk?
Because it's well established that like there's a shit ton of bats in that cave. Like, how hard would it be for him to just be like, okay, guys, we got a mission to go to, and
they're not all wearing little mind control helmets like the penguins.
Throw some food in a hatch. All the bats fly in, he closes it up, he's like, hey, let's roll.
No, here's how he does it, okay? He's like a Pied Piper. He just plays, like, you know, bat dance. He plays some Prince music tracks. Yeah. You know, or Trust. He plays the song Trust and gets everyone to come into the...
That's what it is.
He just brings them all in and keeps them all stashed in there. No,
The party man.
Party man. This movie, though, the ending, once they execute the plan, like, the moment he gets ousted from being the mayor, or potentially becoming the mayor. From that point on, the movie, I think, just rushes to get to the end.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. When I was doing my synopsis, I was just like, it's like Penguin, he does the Batmobile thing. It fails. 2 minutes later, he's like, okay, well, I'm going to kidnap everybody.
Kidnap all the firstborn
sons. And then that fails with literally just a note. Like, a notice. Like, one scene showing, and then a notice sent. And that's... Like, that could have been a huge thing.
you monologued about your plan at the party. Like, no one was going to call the cops and say, hey, there's this guy that he says he's going to abduct all our children. Yeah.
And
no,
then
we get an off-screen. You guys should check in on that.
We get an off-screen Batman, apparently, you know, foiling the thing. All we get is his silhouette across the wall and guy going, and then the next scene, it's like, oh, the monkey coming down the stairs with a note.
And then we get the Penguin Army, and Batman literally dismantles it, like, while he's on the way.
Could there be a cuter army out there? I don't think so.
Where did everyone go in Gotham? There's nobody in the streets. It's like all these penguins. They're like 100,000 people are going to die, and there's nobody on the streets. Nobody.
Except
penguins.
But you can't take that army seriously.
You can't.
Yeah, you'd be like, aw. Look at
these little guys.
They're so cute.
Until they fire a rocket up your ass.
I did read something about like an anecdote that Stan Winston had on this, because like all the robotic penguins were created by him.
Yeah.
And I guess one day they found one of the real penguins snuggled up with the robotic penguins.
Like
just sleeping, you know, cuddled up with the robotic penguins. That's how realistic even the real penguins found these things. But I'm sitting there thinking when I hear this story, it's like the handlers weren't like, guys, we're missing a penguin.
It was a different time.
Or did this penguin like remote control one of the fake ones in? They'll never know.
Maybe that one, just pretended to be a robot. He just learned how to move.
He was like one of those like the one from Wallace and Gromit who was just a secret genius. I'm trying to think which one that was. I forget which story it was. It might have been from like The Wrong Trousers or something. This movie, like that ending, just it rushed through to the very end, and it's like, okay, now we have to go follow the staple of what we did in the first one. Every villain's gotta die.
I kind of thought, I mean, they wouldn't have done this at the time, but I think if it was now, we would have got the Batman Catwoman team up to beat the Penguin at the end, which I think could have made a more satisfying ending, and still have her lose it when Shrek gets involved. Like, I still think you could have kept that in play, but because they did do a good job of kind of showing like she's not full villain. Like she didn't want the Ice Princess to die. Like that wasn't part of her plan and that kind of stuff. So I mean, that's kind of even the way the movie is set up at the end, like showing that she's still alive. Like, I've always wanted to see the movie where Catwoman comes back and it's more of like a, not a full team up, but at least she's like there.
That shot cost $250,000.
Yeah.
Because it was an afterthought. Yeah. And so they shot it with like a body double. That's not even Michelle Pfeiffer.
Nope.
Well, she looks good still, so that suit does wonders.
Does wonders.
And she had a spare one, apparently, I guess, because, you know, that other one was pretty trash. Yeah.
Well, I guess they went through 60 Catwoman suits, and they cost $1,000 a piece. So math, that's at least $10,000 worth of Catwoman suits.
So how hard do you think the Penguin had to be falling? Because I just recently heard a thing about belly flops and how dangerous they are, because if you're hitting the water at a certain velocity and if you have a certain body mass and you hit it just right, like you will shatter your bones.
Yeah.
Right. So, and for the girth of this character, it's like, okay, he fell into the water. Most movie magic will just tell you, oh, it doesn't matter what height you fall at. If you hit the water, you're fine.
No, look at Catwoman falling out of much higher and landing on concrete. She was fine.
Landing on concrete, falling through a glass, like, garden.
Yeah.
You know, an enclosed garden space from an umbrella.
I still love that umbrella propeller scene. Yeah. I really like that.
You know, there was that fall. She gets punched by Batman and falls into a kitty litter truck.
Yeah.
Like, she falls. And she even comments saying, I've been killed like four times this week. You know, you got enough bullets in there to finish me off? Yeah. That in of itself, I think, was just throwing into doubt for people. It's like, oh, she's got superpowers. She's got actual nine lives. It's weird, right?
But it was an interesting choice of Tim Burton to like keep that supernatural like element just... He basically just leaves it for the audience to decide, like, think what you want. Like, he never affirmed in any way whether or not she actually has nine lives or anything like that.
And that's why they did that mystery shot at the end, mm-hmm. where it was like an afterthought thing. Oh, well, let's just punch that in there as a possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, is she or isn't she? We don't know. Well, what is she? Well,
yeah, I mean, she should be at the hospital getting slugs removed from her torso, but...
Oh, sure.
Well, instead, she's up on the roof. She's already made it up to the roof, yeah.
And she's already has a spare suit. Like, what the hell? Yeah. That's what I mean. It's just like, it's not even the battle damaged version. It is the clean version of the suit.
Yeah, I mean, that suit's been, like, napalmed. It's been, you know, doused in kitty litter and all that sort of... Yeah. It's been through battle. I do like the detail, though, that it is damaged consistently throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see the wear happening on the suit as the movie goes on, but it... continuity seemed to match up as it was going, though.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love the Batman suit in this version. It's my favorite out of all the, like, the quadrilogy of movies. It's my favorite design.
Is it because it has Air Jordans as the boots?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It doesn't have actual boots. He's wearing Air Jordan 6s. That they have made look like boots, but
and they just spray painted them.
Yeah, and at Michael Keaton's request, also a zipper. There is a zipper in this suit. Yeah, for
good
bathroom breaks.
Yeah. Yep. But the cowl just looks so good.
Yeah.
Like, it's got the right cool of angles, and the ears just look nice and pointy. And I don't know.
I like the armor and the cowl in this one, but
yeah,
I love the 89 bat symbol. I like that weird different little
extra swoop tail on the tail
thing.
Huh?
Yeah, I like it.
See, and I was gonna say the opposite. I'm glad that it's back to the real Batman symbol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wish they had kept this look going forward in the Schumacher movies, but he went back to sculpted muscles and weird
nipples.
Nipple fetish and
nipple
and butt definition. I mean, whatever.
You have to have butt definition.
Oh, yeah. Especially when it comes to Batgirl, right?
Yeah.
Get that glory shot in there. Oh, good grief.
Hey, we watched it recently. They all got their glory shots, okay?
They didn't
sexualize her.
No, they all got them. Yeah. So, equal opportunity for everyone.
Clooney and O'Donnell got their due. Yeah. I think, this movie ends with a bunch of miniature zoos getting exploded, and... then Batman is getting his ride home from Alfred and sees Catwoman in the alley, but it turns out to be a cat. So did he just steal somebody's cat? Like, how do you know that's a stray, Bruce Wayne? You can afford your own cat if you want a cat.
Yeah, but cat's not tagged, you know. It's just, sure,
just stole
who
a
knows?
Cat.
He just stole a cat. It's a back alley somewhere. He's taking the cat out of the cold. Maybe he was going to take it to the local shelter after they were done.
Yeah. Well, there,
you know.
Yeah. Okay.
That could have happened.
Yeah.
You know, cat's out in the cold. Yeah. That's not cool.
And because it is Christmas month here on I Used to Like This One, we get to end the movie with, you know, Merry Christmas, Alfred. Merry Christmas, Mr. Wayne. Master Bruce, whatever.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Wayne.
Come what may. Merry Christmas, Mr. Wayne. Merry Christmas, Alfred. Goodwill toward men and women.
And there we go. That is Batman Returns. Now, Colin Lee on IMDb, it scored 7.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 68. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 81% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 73%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like eating floor. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Most of the reviews for this movie were way too long, so select few like this podcast. Malik Caperso, 5 out of 5 stars, says, Christmas has come and the Batman came with it. Bruce Wayne tries to maintain his personal and professional life as a billionaire and superhero, but that proves harder every day. Meanwhile, the Penguin plans to rise from the depths and destroy Gotham, and Catwoman slinks her way through its alleys on the prowl for vengeance. Batman has to face both these fiends while trying to keep his true identity on the down low. Tim Burton returns to give us a perfect sequel to the already famous Batman saga. With the gothic factor up to 10, this film is one that everyone should be watching.
Tell me perfect in that. They said perfect sequel, right?
Yeah.
Tell me it was P-U-R-R. Fact.
It wasn't.
Fuck.
Missed opportunity.
It was, yeah.
Tommy Gunn says 5 out of 5 stars. Batman 1989 was huge for me when I saw it as a kid. I was 10, and ever since, the Caped Crusader was number one. Years went by, and I finally reunited with 89 when we went to a video store and rented this one. I fell in love with this just as hard. Michael Keaton is back, and this time around, we have two villains, Catwoman, who is hot in this, and the Penguin, who quickly became my favorite part of it. Yes, it's darker and many other things, but it does it for me.
Right on. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah, this one was interesting. Tara Hicks, 5 out of 5 stars, says, "Hey, Michelle. First off, me and my dad are huge fans of Catwoman. And your portrayal of the iconic character in this astounding film is just... I don't even have words, Michelle. You are just so beautiful and so sweet, and the Batman Returns Catwoman might be my favorite iteration of the sexy badass character we all know and love. You know what? I'm thinking about playing Catwoman myself someday. I mean, I just love Catwoman literally so, so much, and she has sported so many sexy, badass outfits, and she's so brave and so beautiful. I really want to be like the brave and beautiful Catwoman when I grow up. If I do ever get a chance to play Catwoman in a future Batman movie, do you have any advice for me? Like, what should I expect from playing Catwoman?"
What site do they think they're on? This isn't master class that you're getting these reviews from, right? It's not somewhere where you can actually pose questions to Michelle Pfeiffer and expect her to read them, right?
This is just straight up Google.
Straight up Google reviews. Okay, just checking. People sometimes forget how the internet works.
Well, if you've been on Twitter or X as it is now, I mean, it's like sometimes it's a direct line to them. Is Michelle Pfeiffer even on X?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you know, my feed is dominated by Mark Hamill, so.
Can you imagine how stoked that girl would be if one day Michelle Pfeiffer's on Google and is like, let's just see what people have to say about Batman Returns, that she reads this and answers? That'd be so cool.
Well, have you ever seen those things on YouTube where it's like celebrities answer or, you know, check a comment forums
or something?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And so those are always funny because sometimes they'll go in and be like, "Hey, so-and-so, this is Keanu Reeves." Like Keanu Reeves did one. Yeah. It's worth checking out. Yeah.
Is that kind of like the Jimmy Kimmel thing where it's like the celebrity mean tweets?
Sort of like that, but this is, they go to like everywhere that has been talked about them, and they get accounts and they can actually respond. So, they're fun. Yeah.
Last one, Brandon O'Shield says 5 out of 5 stars, always has and will be my favorite Batman film. The Dark Knight is the best to me, but I love this film. Very underrated in my book. I admit the scene with him eating the cat and being thrown as a baby in sewer, I wish didn't happen.
Towards the beginning of the movie. Yeah. As a child, I ate a cat in my iron playpen.
As a kid, I was scared of that scene and felt bad for Penguin as a baby. I would have loved to have seen this in theater. I still think Keaton was best Batman, had perfect voice, best looking car and costume.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely best looking car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is still a sexy Batmobile, yeah.
You know, it's just funny to me, like, for my co-host, Gil, like, between the two of us, like, he swore up and down that this was his favorite Batman movie for a good long time between the two of them. And I was just like, I couldn't get behind that because, like, that first movie just feels so perfect in how it was done. And this one just kind of is, I mean, almost literally, because it pales in comparison, because, you know, its whole color overtone is one of the reviews says is like at the time was that it looked like it had been all shot in an inkwell.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like there's no color in this movie. It just felt like there was, like, for me, it was missing just a little bit more. Like it could have gone on a little longer, or maybe they just didn't need to have both villains in it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and this is kind of where that trend started, is as soon as you hit the sequel, you got to have more than one villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's just, but overall, I mean, it's like, then you get the celebrity stunt casting for everything since then, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You just can't do it for Superman. Superman's got to be an unknown guy somehow to make that work. If it's somebody else, then you get, it's Nick Cage as Superman.
Yeah.
And then you get taken out of the movie.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. So, I mean, Batman Returns.
Is it a Christmas movie, Sean? Is it?
It is absolutely a Christmas movie. Now, I didn't ask this, and you're a first-time Christmas guest as well. Anytime anyone sees us on Christmas for the first time, I always have to ask, what is your go-to holiday classic?
Oh, are we talking just anything? Or
What is your Christmas movie of choice? Yeah.
Christmas movie of choice. Scrooged.
Scrooged,
I think, is the first one that comes to mind, because that to me is just a wonderful. I mean, it's directed by Richard Donner, for one, who's one of my favorite directors. Mm-hmm. And you get a great Bill Murray performance. Karen Allen is in there as well, from Raiders of the Lost Ark, and you got Bobcat Goldthwait and so many other great comedians at the time in there. And it's just a fun retelling of that classic Scrooge story. I mean, the close follow-up is like the original A Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim. Yeah. You know, that's a really good one too. But for me mostly when I go to revisit for like a Christmas type viewing, usually is like the animated shorts that those specials that had come out when I was growing up.
Rankin and Bass or
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, I will watch like every year. Yeah.
Were you talking more Peanuts?
No, Peanuts is not necessarily my jam. For like, we rewatched that for our podcast for a Christmas episode. We watched that and How the Grinch Stole Christmas as a comparative sort of thing. Yeah. And we found that the How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the Chuck Jones adaptation of that, was so beautifully done and feels so like the standards of it are so good.
Yeah.
You know, even despite being from the 60s, it felt like it could have been made today. It was really good. Mm-hmm. The Peanuts one felt rushed. Like, it's got the nostalgia feels to it, but ultimately we felt it didn't quite hold up.
Yeah.
Or at least, in the way we ranked it anyway.
Yeah.
But like the Garfield Christmas special, my family and I will watch that every year.
One that not enough people know about is the California Raisins.
Oh, are you talking about the Will Vinton Claymation Christmas special?
Yeah.
Where it's the whole, like, runs the gamut of different stuff?
Here we go, a waffling.
Yes!
Did you say waffling? It's wassailing. No, it's waffling, and they're all carrying waffles. Fucking hilarious.
Waffling, waddling, it's the running gag throughout. You can find bits and pieces of that on YouTube. Yeah, I just wish you could find it in its complete form. I had it on a VHS tape back in the day.
So
that's long since gone.
Yeah. Okay, but, anyway, Batman Returns.
It's a Christmas movie like Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Die Hard is my Christmas movie, see?
There you go.
Yeah, and Colin is a Home Alone guy, so...
What, no Gremlins? No love for Gremlins?
We've done Gremlins on the show, yeah.
But that's a Christmas movie.
It is, and it was one of our Christmas episodes. We slotted it into the right month.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
I like unorthodox Christmas movies, which is why we're here with Batman Returns in our Christmas season. Because, I mean, they say Merry Christmas. They're lighting a tree. You know?
That's true. That's true.
On this viewing, for me, I realized just how stupid this movie is. I still absolutely adore it, but my God, like, it makes no sense. It's campy as fuck, and I never realized how campy this movie was. And it's just funny that, you know, the Burton Batmans are always held in such high esteem, and it's silly. But I love it, because it's still Batman, and I love Michael Keaton as a Batman. I love every performance in this movie from every villain, you know, including Max Schreck. I still had so much fun with this movie, but boy, oh boy, the people that say that this is the best Batman movie, it's like, certain point of view.
Maybe.
But, you know,
it's the theater of the bizarre, and that's hearkening back to how Adam West treated the material in his version.
Yeah.
Is that they just embraced the fact that everyone in this world takes it all so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it work.
Yeah.
Is because it's not a matter of people winking at you going, huh, we know it's campy, hey. You know, it was, they treated the material like it was, okay, we're doing a serious, like, exploration of character and dynamics and of personalities of what makes these animal people tick, as Burton kind of put it. Mm-hmm. He even made a comment in that same featurette that you and I watched, Colin, where like he's standing there and looking at Michael Keaton in the full garb, and he just took a moment and realized, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
This is so silly. Like, what are we doing? No, it's like, and he had to suppress a laugh because he's like, no, this is serious. We have to treat this seriously. Otherwise, we're going to, this movie's not going to work. You know, so, but yeah, when you do watch it, like, Sean, I kind of had the same feeling as you did, where it's like, after I was done, I was like, this is a lot sillier than I remember it being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still love the production value of it. I love watching the performances of it, but the story is what kind of brings it down for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with both of you, but I like what you talk about, like the performances are great, but the story, what you were talking about earlier, Lee, it was just so, they just rushed through everything. And I'd never really saw that before. Like in my mind, when I think about the movie, it is more deliberately paced. But when I was watching it this time, I was like, it is not. It's just like one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And like the thinnest story to tie it all together.
Because you have to stretch out the sexual tension scenes between Michelle Pfeiffer and Bruce
Wayne.
Yeah,
I thought there was way more. I remember there being way more between Bruce and Selina, like in the real world, than there actually is.
They have their one thing at his house where he does the awkward teenager thing of making out on the couch.
Yeah.
Hey,
like, she attacked him.
True.
Yeah,
but
she
it's still him. It's you think about this. It's a teenage male fantasy of getting the girl to come over to your house and make out on the couch.
Yeah. But come on, you don't think Bruce Wayne has some sort of arrested development going on in his psyche? You know, his childhood ended at 10. You know?
Yeah. 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 That's why Alfred has to keep setting him up with women.
And Vichy Soir.
I would say that more so than ever, I realize that Max Schreck is the unsung core of this movie. He's like the one thing that like keeps everything going.
Mm-hmm. He's the energy vampire, and the villain of the piece. Yeah.
And I really enjoyed Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Well, okay, I think that's it. I think that, there we go. That is Batman Returns, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, huge thank you to our guest, Lee Conrad. Lee, if people want to find you out there online doing your thing, tell people where to find you. Plug your shit.
I'll plug my shit. Well, if you are looking to see what I'm doing currently, I work as a caricature artist at the farmers markets here in Edmonton, at the Old Strathcona Farmers Market, as well as the Edmonton Downtown Farmers Market. You can find me there on Saturdays between 9 a.m. and 2:30. But if you want to find me on my Instagram or Facebook, it's at LC the Draw Guy. So that's LCTHEDRAWGUY. And you can check out my portfolio of stuff there.
Why? Because we love
it. Yeah. And then if you're looking for my thoughts on other stuff, I've got two podcasts that are out in the archivals out there. If you on your favorite podcast servers, you can find me on the Scrappy Doo Principle. That's PRINCIPLE with co-host Gilbert Da Silva, where we talk about nostalgia bits, either graphic novels, TV shows, and movies, and see whether or not they hold up to our nostalgic memories of them, as well as Kistery Science Theater, where I sit with my high school friends Adam Smith and Des Shaw, where we discuss all things about the rock band Kiss. That is by far one of the funniest podcasts that we've ever done, and there's 5 years worth of material there that I'm sure you can find something that might tickle your funny bone, because the fun thing about that show is we do it while we're drinking. So
did you do a live show from the Kiss concert in Edmonton a few weeks ago?
No, but I know of a guy who did, so that's no. The Kistery Science Theater once been sort of, you know, it's sort of in syndication, as it were.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Quite a number of years ago, and but like I said, we've got like 5 years worth of material. We've said everything we've wanted to about this.
The definitive the definitive piss opinion piece. Hey,
let's just say that like our show at least made enough of an impact that in the KISS fandom circles we're still being talked about, and they keep wondering when we're going to do another show.
Well, there's an audience out there for just about anything. I recently found out that I am in the top 10 of bus-related podcasts on the internet for my other show, In Front of the Yellow Line, so...
Bus-related? Like, bus. Talk about...
Yeah, like... my day job. I'm a city bus driver.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm on a top 10 list out there.
That's fantastic.
But who is curating these very specific top 10 lists of bus-related podcasts on the internet? There's more than 10? Well, thank you for joining us, Lee. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end, just tell people. Share our posts. Word of mouth it helps so much. Or go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Help drive us up those charts with science and algorithms. Or if you want to be a financial supporter, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family. And you get a shout out because you're now an executive producer. Just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. Let us know if you have any questions for Lee, since he's clearly the Batman expert. So if we need to follow up on anything, we'll get in touch with him and put you in touch. So there you go.
Yeah. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, next week we're keeping this Tim Burton train rolling, aren't we? I think.
Yeah.
We probably are. Yeah.
Let's let it rip.
I think we're going to have that one. Yeah, recorded before the other one.
What are you talking about next?
Oh, we are doing A Nightmare Before Christmas. The Nightmare Before Christmas. The Nightmare. Sorry, not yeah. A Nightmare. Yeah.
Oh, I thought maybe you were going to talk about Edward Scissorhands.
No. I've got
to keep that one from last year.
Yeah, or next year. I tried to do the Trinity with Colin, and he said, you know what, that's just too much Tim Burton. And I go, you know what, yes it is. Because we've done Beetlejuice recently, too. So it's kind of like, it's Tim Burton overload at this point. It was a good call to drop Edward Scissorhands off of the
possibility. Fair enough.
But yeah, we have The Nightmare Before Christmas, a little Jack Skellington for us. Yeah, this is a movie that I've never really... I don't get.
I have a lot of interesting anecdotes about this movie that I'm looking forward to sharing. And also, The Nightmare Before Christmas is kind of weirdly the B-side to Batman Returns, which is strange. Like, it's just The Nightmare Before Christmas is how Tim Burton found Danny Elfman. And is how Danny Elfman ultimately comes to do this movie. Because Nightmare was in production for so long, pre-Batman Returns. And then, it's a whole thing. But.
Yeah, I look forward to this discussion. Well, there we go. So, until then, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart. I almost forgot my name.
it's tough to remember sometimes. And join us next time when we take a look at The Nightmare Before Christmas on I Used to Like This One. Holy shit.
I'm sorry, I talk a lot.
Ah, it's good, man.
We're coming up on hour number two there, yeah, Colin, so you're not far off from, say, 3 hours.
I will say with that 2 hours, I mean, it was probably about 15 minutes in when we actually started, so...
True.
Yeah.
It'll be 2 hours by the time it's over.
No, but the recording itself is coming up to two... I'm just saying, we're at 1:45.